I'm Åse Rötting. I'm at the moment a researcher at something called the Strategic Research Program at the University of Oslo, and this program is called Cultural Complexity in the New Norway. In this program, I'm working on constructions of Norwegianness in school, and part of that work has been to look at how concepts of sexuality and gender equality seems to be sort of markers of Norwegianness, and also looking into how then cultural norms and the others seem to be presented in relation to sexual norms in this field. Before that, I did my postdoc on sexual education in secondary school in Norway, primarily focusing on how heteronormativity is reproduced and produced in teaching. So I wasn't specifically asking or looking for how teachers dealt with homosexuality. I had a wider focus on sexual education, and specifically on how heterosexuality all the time was taken for granted as sort of the norm and the starting point in all discussions and all teaching, and then how in that, from that angle, how was then homosexuality presented. But it wasn't a typical sort of gay study, it was sort of a queer, more from a queer perspective though.
So maybe we could go back to this notion of Norwegianness. Can you explain to me what that means in the context of your interests?
When I first started, I was sort of coming very much from this sexual education project. So the two projects of sexual education and Norwegianness in school, they seemed to be sort of merging together, and so that's I think also that's why I started out with sexuality, because I mean Norwegianness could also be linked to democracy, human rights, all sorts of, you know, all the nice things that tend to be presented as what we in Norway have got or have achieved, as in opposition to the others somewhere else. That's sort of the very simply spoken, but that's still sort of the picture that seemed to be drawn in education when Norway is being compared to the world outside. Then we tend to be sort of on top. I find that really problematic. So I've been working on this from a post-colonial perspective, and looking at how then this way of presenting the others at the same time also reproduce this concept of Norway being the best, and the way how we have sort of come to the end, as if we have already gotten all, like gender equality and gay and lesbian rights and stuff like that. But I mean, it's not that simple. Like in this, together with my colleague Stine Lena Svensson, we have analyzed how sexual norms are being sort of when cultural norms are being introduced in relation to gender and sexuality in textbooks, they tend to create this gap between the Norwegian way and the others, us and them, right? And then it's the story tends to be told along a storyline, historical line. So we have sort of come to the end, and we're the end of history in a way, while the others, they're sort of more or less behind us. They haven't come as far. And one of the stories, sort of the ways of telling this story, is to be like, in the old days in Norway, girls had to marry older men arranged by their family. That was common in Norway back in the 1800s. And this is the way it still is, mm-hmm. among Muslims, for example. That's sort of the way the story is told. So they're sort of saying, this isn't that unfamiliar. It's not that unfamiliar to Norwegian culture, mm-hmm. but it still belongs to the past. right? So then sort of Muslim families and the Muslim girls, they are that way being placed in the past, right? They're still developing while we have sort of come to the end. And so I mean that's I find that's a very problematic way of describing. And it's also the same, of course, with the gay and lesbian rights and homosexuality.
So just to go step by step, the idea of Norwegian is, as it is taught in schools, is based on issues of national identity and national pride and values, like...
I don't think it really used to be like that not too long ago, but in the current curriculum, and we have national curriculums, so it's all schools are supposed to sort of teach more or less the same. It's not decided by the district or each school. It's a national curriculum decided by the Department of Education. So it's sort of very formal, and the current one is from 2006, and that's the first time they're introducing this question of cultural norms in relation to love and marriage. That's sort of the headline, and that's sort of when it seems like when the textbooks and the teachers are supposed to talk about cultural norms, then they'll start out by the others, and at the same time talking about Norwegian norms as sort of the contrast.
You mean to define themselves in opposition?
Yeah. So before that, I don't know if these norms were specifically named as Norwegian, because they weren't supposed to teach about others. So then they didn't really need to define the Norwegian as specified or different from the others, right? So this is sort of, I think, a new turn that has come.
So the influx of immigrants is something that probably has pushed them in this direction.
Yeah. So it's today it's supposed to be a focus on like the cultural complexity and this started in the late 90s slightly, but at that time it was still more focused on individuals coming to Norway, like refugees and asylum seekers, and they didn't really seem, the way it's presented in the curriculum to me indicates that they weren't seen as somehow influencing the Norwegian society. They were only sort of individuals that could possibly become like us, if you see what I mean. That's sort of the implicit way that it was dealt with, I think. But now, since 2006, it's more explicit. Now Norway is a multicultural society, and that's why we have to also approach it differently.
So who is the we and who are the they, or the us and them, in Norway along those lines? And is, for example, a sexual minority considered a minority, or is it because of the advanced legislation part of the mainstream in regards to education?
Well, that's one of our main findings, I would say, looking at how when Norwegianness and Norwegian culture is being defined in comparison to others, then homo tolerance, gay rights, and homosexuality, it's mostly a tolerance for homosexuality. It's not necessarily a homosexuality as such that is sort of seem to be representing Norwegianness, if you see what I mean. But it's so in a way, the Norwegianness is sort of it's heterosexuals being tolerant towards homosexuals, right? Sort of, but also sometimes, like in some pictures in the textbooks, they'll do this contrast. We have one picture actually. It's in the book here. It's a contrast. It's here. I don't know if you can see it, but this is about ways of living before and now. That's, or sort of, it's about marriage and families. And on one hand side, you have two men and a little girl in the middle, reading a paper in the park, And then on the other side, it's a Maasai and a handful of Maasai women in the back. And then you have this mud hut, and it's really primitive, right? And a dark picture. And this first says, in Norway, partnership between homosexuals are allowed. And then among the Maasais, men can have more wives, several wives. So you make this opposition between, you know, the really pre-modern Maasais practicing several wives, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the scene, supposed to be seen as the definite opposite of gender equality,
mm-hmm.
like, which is the idol in Norway. And the interesting, one of the interesting things here is that, I mean, in this picture, a gay couple is sort of representing the Norwegian and the gender equality and the Norwegians. But what is interesting, this book was published before gay couples actually had a right to adopt children. So this picture is sort of, it's sort of drawing a, it's picturing Norway as even more, and it's even more gay friendly as it actually was at the time, right? Because they, putting this girl in the picture indicates that it's a gay couple with a daughter, right? And at the time, it wasn't allowed to adopt kids. So it's like they're sort of presenting Norwegian gay rights as even better than it was at the time. It's really paradoxical. But what happens when in the chapters on specifically on sexuality? Because it's two different sections. Like you'll have one section on cultural norms that tends to deal with gender and sexuality, but then you'll have the more traditional sexuality chapter, and in that chapter the we is definite heterosexual, because then it's those others being presented in the last little section in the end, and the tone or the way of speaking from the author, the textbook authors, it'll be when we fall in love, we all feel blah blah blah. Like, and really try to include the students and be very, you know, they try to be really open, you know, and modern and not sort of shy, you know. They describe how you feel and all that sort of stuff. But it's all about it's this we is definitely a heterosexual collective.
So how is homosexuality taught in school in that chapter?
Well, then it'll be taught as they'll usually start out by saying some people are homosexuals. They blah blah blah. So then you're like specifically going from we to they. So that's sort of a distinct move in the author's voice in the books. And it's the tolerance perspective that is sort of very much the focus. Homosexuality is said to be something that we should accept, assuming the sort of the classroom is a collective heterosexual we, right? So and that's the same. Both teachers and students tend to be to state the same kind of stuff, like, you know, we have to accept homosexuals because they're just like us, and they're normal people. That kind of quotes from students I find really
it's a liberal rhetoric, you know.
Definitely. And then so it's tolerance, but at the same time, I mean, this way of teaching sexuality is a way of reproducing heterosexuality as the norm, and it's the way of also reproducing the imagined heterosexual students as a group that are allowed to sort of draw the line, what is acceptable, when, what can be accepted and not, where sort of is it okay with the, what sorts of rights should they have, right? And also homosexuality is always presented as something that if it's real, then it's okay, but you shouldn't try it It's like if you think you might be attracted to one of your same-sex friends, well, wait and see. It might go over. Yeah, exactly. So it's like if you're really sure you are homosexual, then it's fine, and then you should come out and, you know, tell your parents, tell your friends. It'll be fine. But if you're not really sure, just wait and see. It might go over, and it might not be as bad as you think. It's kind of that sort of the implicit message, right? And also at the same time, they really focused on the teachers and the books are really focused on emphasizing how difficult many gays and lesbians in Norway have difficulties. They have or presumably will face. And it's, I mean, I think it's that sort of comes from a good intention. It's an intention of, you know, acknowledging difficulties and homonegativism in the Norwegian society. But at the same time, when that's the main focus, that's definitely not a good advertising for becoming or trying it out for the kids, right? So it's like this. It's a really discrepancy between saying, oh, it's so, you'll feel lonely and your parents might not like it and it'll be difficult, that sort of stuff. And then at the same time, in the Norwegian society today, it's fully okay. It's no problem. It's only in Iran that's where they have, you know, death penalty. They'll have like Iran as the contrast, or old days in Norway. That's sort of today's Norway is supposed to be.
Right. Some other people have been mentioning an overarching narrative of tragedy when it comes to describing the homosexual experience, and it seems that this is a little bit the way that it is also presented in school. Yes.
Yeah, it's a. I mean, this the story of tragedy is definitely very much alive in school. I mean, I've also heard students saying, oh, if I discovered I was gay, I would commit suicide. So this, like Tone's work on suicide, that discourse is really much well known. But I think textbooks and teachers would probably try and avoid that dramatic end, sort of, because they'll probably see how bad it is for the students to get that picture.
Slightly negative, but not.
So it's, yeah, it's more, but it's. I think their intention is really to acknowledge problems, but the effect is that it's like homosexuality is presented as something problematic and something that you should really avoid and hope, like it's like. Pray to God you'll never be there. It's like it's really nothing attractive. It's nothing that is sort of is presented as something you might like and something you should try out and something that might like bring you a good life. So it's not so that so all the good stories of queer lives, they are not really presented and visible.
Let me ask you a two-part question. The first one is from when is this? When was this way of teaching revised last? And the other one is if perhaps you can go back in time, a few, maybe 10 or 15 or 20 years, to outline this progression. Like how does this change over time?
The first time homosexuality was mentioned in Norwegian curriculum, which is all the curriculums, like I said, they're national, so they're given from the Department of Education. That was in 1974. So, like we have basically the first curriculum that is sort of comparable with today's. That's from 1939 and then 1960, and they hardly dealt with sexuality at all. So that's sort of so
in homosexual or heterosexual.
Heterosexual, nothing really. Mm-hmm. Well, they you were supposed to learn about. I don't even know the word in English. how babies are made. That's basically the only thing you were supposed to the students were supposed to learn about. But nothing about sexuality. It's even actually explicitly said, this is not about, this is not sexual education, it's only about how babies are made. That's yeah. But anyway, so in 74, that's the first curriculum that both deals with gender equality, and even the gender equality part is actually way more political and I would say better than today's, because it was influenced by the feminism in the 70s, and it was really it was really a good chapter on gender equality and why it was important to promote gender equality among students. Today, gender equality is seen as something we already have, so we don't really have to bother anymore, which I find problematic. But anyways, in 74, homosexuality was mentioned as, in parentheses, as something, let's say, it said, sexual practices different from the norm should also be mentioned. That's sort of the way it was phrased. So, like, sexual practices different from the normal should also be mentioned. And then in parentheses, you had exhibitionism and homosexuality. I'm not really sure what exhibitionism was, but that's so exhibitionism and homosexuality was then mentioned in parentheses. That was in 74. So, I mean, it was really stigmatizing, but it was still supposed to be mentioned. And that's probably because...
But it was not amply expanded and...
No,
just in parentheses.
Yeah, I haven't looked in the books, okay. So I don't know what the textbooks at that time actually did. But so this is the curriculum, this the way
mm-hmm.
the curriculum states it. But I mean the same sex or sex between men was legalized in Norway in 72,
mm-hmm.
and this curriculum was from 74. So I think it's a direct effect from this this new law legalizing homosexuality that was sort of implemented in the curriculum. Now it should be mentioned because it wasn't criminal, it wasn't illegal anymore,
right?
But then the next one was in 87, and that's the first time in one subject homosexuality is mentioned alongside with falling in love. So that's sort of it was still, so in 87 it was kind of ambivalent. In some subjects it was really marginalized, and I mean some of the subjects were really, really heterosexuality. It was definitely the norm still. It was not even close to being sort of equalized, but in one little section it was mentioned when teaching about falling in love, then heterosexuality and homosexuality was both sort of linked to the concept of falling in love, which I find... So it was sort of going from being something different from the normal in 74 to something that could actually be seen in relationship to, like, falling in love.
To your avail, what prompts that change? I mean, because it's only just, it's 10 years.
No, I think it's reflecting the changes in the society, but also it's not... The Norwegian curriculum is also... The different subjects seem to have slightly different profiles, because they're usually written by groups, and the group sort of writing the curriculum for religion, for example, seem to be more conservative than the one writing the goals for social science. And this was in social science. This would never, you wouldn't find the link between homosexuality and falling in love in the religion, the text.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, it's still the same. Even the current curriculum, I think, is quite conservative in religion and more progressive or liberal in social science. So it's not a coincidence where it came, sort of this shift. So it's probably written by I don't know who, but some more left-wing progressive teachers or educators. And then in 97, the next one in 97, and at that time it was sort of mainstreamed because we had gotten the Partnership Act in 93. So in 97, when talking about marriage, you also had to add partnership, as a homosexual partnership. So it was sort of mainstreamed in the way that you would never, in the curriculum, when they say heterosexuality, they also said homosexuality. It's sort of both. But the textbooks and the teaching would still be heteronormative. But the curriculum would sort of try to, in a way, the curriculum tried to establish, I think, an equality that wasn't, had no base in teaching and textbooks, because, and in, or society either, because heterosexuality was still definitely the norm and the taken for granted starting point in all discussions and conversations on sexuality in school. But the curriculum, since the law was changed with this partnership act, then the curriculum had to sort of try and reflect this supposedly equality, if you see what I mean. But it was not implied in teaching, because there was no base for it, neither in society nor in the teacher's understanding or in the textbooks or anything. But at least it's not explicitly discriminative anymore, depending on how you see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say it's still discriminating the way they're changing from we to they, for example, in the textbooks. But it's definitely the homo tolerance, the norm of tolerance. That is I would say the tolerance is normative at the time. Like at, I've seen students that try to oppose this homo tolerance, and they would be like told to just shut up and.
What do you mean? How opposed?
Minority students, and also or boys more in general, but mostly. Students from ethnic minorities.
Students that were opposed to tolerance.
Yeah, tolerance. They would, and well, when they voice sort of homonegativism,
mm-hmm.
I think what they're doing might not necessarily be to say I'm really hostile to homosexuals. It might also be more a question of opposing the normative Norwegianess in school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because homo tolerance is sort of equivalent to being a good Norwegian and to be Norwegian, and that's what you're supposed to be like if you want to become a Norwegian, right? So if they want to sort of oppose this normative Norwegianess, homo negativism seemed to be sort of a simple way of doing it, and it might not necessarily.
Do you think that it is about that, or it is a kind of inherent rejection to homosexuality?
It's probably both, but I find it quite striking that it seems to be male students being marginalized at school that voice this homonegativism, and both ethnical Norwegian and minority. So, but they'll be marginalized. It'll be the noisy boy in the back corner,
mm-hmm.
the one who sort of disturbs the teaching anyways. And that this is one way of disturbing the teaching, right? Mm-hmm. So it's sort of I'm not saying that's the only aspect, but I think it seems to me like that's one aspect, and I think that's important to emphasize, because that way it's not. Otherwise, one might say it's the Muslim boys or the Muslim students being the problem. And I've even had teachers saying, well, I don't know how I can teach about homosexuality because the boys in the class, they'll, you know, they're so immature, and they can't take it, and they're so negative, and they'll just disrupt the whole lecture. So maybe I'll just drop the subject at all.
Yeah.
And then one teacher told me, like I was doing observation for a week or two, and she told me like, oh, you know, I find a way, because this specific guy, he was absent one day, so then I could do that subject when he wasn't there. So sort of so it's definitely seen as sort of a for some teachers and also students, it's seen as a problem. How can we have sort of good respectful discussions and conversations about the subject, because of those few boys, they can't handle the subject. They just, you know, shout out and they'll be negative and stuff. And that's one part of it. But I think it's also, if you look closer, it's not necessarily the because they're Muslim, because that's sort of because that's also what the teachers, I've heard teachers telling other students, saying, oh, you know, it's because in his culture, that's the way they feel about it. Mm-hmm. So we have to understand where he's coming from. But I think
what is the debate around this issue? I mean, how can it be implemented within the curriculum so that it can be reconciled? Because it seems to be a very tricky subject.
But I think how can it? Well, first of all, I think it's a problem that it's sort of presented as something you can be for or against, because the way the subject is presented, it's definitely presented as something you should be for, like all the students should conclude, I have nothing against homosexuals. That's sort of the also I've heard students saying, in our group we have agreed we have nothing against the homosexuals. That's sort of the conclusion from group discussions about it, which means, like, it's presented as something you should be for, but implicitly you could also be against, right? So it's seen as something.
It is not problematized. I mean, because it seems like it is easy to teach something consensually like that, like we should all support homosexuality. But is there some critical way of approaching the subject? I mean, because it is something that is outside of the normative in any way, so maybe it is, I don't know, a more incisively critical approach would be better.
You might find some teachers that are critical to the new Marriage Act, probably. They would prefer a separate law for same-sex partnership and heterosexual marriage. And also you'll find teachers, I've heard teachers saying, well, you know, I think they should have, like, all the rights to not be discriminated, but I think it's difficult if they should also have the right to adopt children. So children, that's sort of still that's sort of seen as a tricky issue. But I mean, the main problem is how it's still always focused on them, right? It's mm-hmm. like heterosexuality doesn't seem to be a subject at all. It's nothing you can talk about. It's nothing you can discuss. It's not seen as something you can. And I mean, that's also this whole idea of Norway being gender equal already is partly. It's partly possible to present it that way because sexuality and gender seem not to be linked together in school. Because, I mean, it's when you link gender and sexuality together, that's when you definitely see, at least that's one of the most obvious sort of signs of this, the lack of gender equality in Norway. 1 out of 10 girls, according to statistics from last year or the year before, has been raped or have experienced, like, rape
attempts,
yeah.
1 every 10?
By the age of 19. So this is happening mostly in high school. And it's happening with their boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, male friends, and at parties, private parties. Going, you know, when they go away for the weekend and stuff. So, I mean, heterosexual harassments and sexual violence, I think that's a big problem, but that's not seen as a gender issue. Somehow, it's not at all linked, so it's not like the sort of heterosexual concepts of heterosexuality is not at all linked to problems of sexual, any sorts of sexual pressure, harassment, anything.
So how is it discussed?
It's mostly discussed like the boys, you shouldn't do it, you should make sure to respect when the girls say no, and the girls are told to be, to say no. It's not seen as sort of a result of the concept of heterosexuality, how boys and girls are supposed to relate within the game of heterosexuality. So that's one way. That's I think one important reason why this idea of Norwegian gender equality can sort of survive, because it's not linked to problems of the young or young people and sexuality.
I have a question about the way, if you have had the possibility of observing the way that this reproducing of the heteronormative way, to say it in somehow, in through the curriculum and education, reflects itself onto the gay and lesbian community and transsexual community also. I mean, that's also another question I want to come
to
is the transsexual thing, but how does this affect the way that students are living their lives in school? Is there issues of bullying? Is there issues of hate crimes? Is there issues of what is the self-perception of these students?
Well, as you probably heard already about, like, gay being sort of the most used bullying word at the time, or homo in Norway. So that's definitely seen as a problem, I would say, among teachers as well. Like, they have this, like, but again, I think they're just trying to say it's not allowed to use that word. So they're not necessarily investigating
the roots.
What's the effects of using that word. And I think also the effect, I mean, it's according to research that I've seen, most boys that are being named gay bullied as gay isn't boys that necessarily orient themselves toward, like, they're not necessarily falling in love with boys. They're just, it's boys that perform sort of a different masculinity. There might be boys that, you know, play an instrument, or boys that do their homework, and boys that don't interrupt teaching, boys that avoid fights, and like, so that's what I've seen from British and also my own. But I've read some British studies about that, and they're quite clear about how gay represents sort of a different kind of non-normative masculinity. So it's not really about sexuality; it's about the way gender is performed. And so, in this book, we're discussing this and saying, when the kids are using, like, and also whore, that's the female, homo and whore, that's sort of the two main sexualized bullying words. And I mean, homo is telling all boys what they shouldn't be. It's not necessarily telling some boys that, oh, if you shouldn't be homo, but it's telling all boys that you should not be, like, feminine, you should not be, you shouldn't like classical music, or you shouldn't, whatever, all that is seen as sort of feminine.
It's the patriarchal way.
So it's a way of drawing lines for acceptable ways of doing masculinity for all boys, as same as this whore, hawker, bullying with girls. It's not necessarily affecting any girls having many sexual partners. It's affecting all girls, telling them what they shouldn't be doing and how they should not behave to qualify as attractive heterosexual girls, right?
Mm-hmm. Let me move on to asking about the issue of transgender teaching, if it is a point, and how it is implemented.
I have I don't think I've ever heard it taught. Just trying to think. I think in some books they'll have like, you know, this little definitions, like key definitions. You'll have heterosexuality, bisexuality, homosexuality, and transsexualism, or something like that. You'll have maybe in a little column on the side, you know, some definitions. But I mean, it's the same goes for bisexuality. That's not mentioned. That's also, I've heard a few times mentioned, but it's only mentioned as a definition. It's nothing that is sort of taken into account when you talk about sexuality in general. Mm-hmm. So it's there. The whole concept of sexuality is definitely it's binary, and it seems to be you're born with your sexuality. That's the way it's presented. So it's nothing sort of socially constructed in a way. It's not something that changes throughout life. It's like it's given. That's the way you are, and that's also the whole way they talk about homosexuality. Like if you find out that's what you are, then it's okay. But if you aren't, then you shouldn't try it. It's like, you see what I mean? But also about transsexualism has not been really on the agenda at all. We're writing about it in this book because we're discussing the whole how gender seems to be so normative. Like you're supposed to make sure you read as either or. And we're also talking about how children are taught to read people as male or female, right? And how they can be confused, if they come up to a person and say, "Are you a man or a woman? You have such a short hair, you can't be a woman. But why do you have breasts then?" It's like they'll, I've had kids. I tend to shave my hair in the summer, and then they'll come up and say, "Like, but are you really a woman? Are you sure?" And then if I ask back, and I said, "Well, but you have a green shirt on, so you can't be a woman." Like they're trying, you know, it doesn't make sense to them, and then they're making up weird explanations for why they can't read me correct, right? And so we're actually writing quite much about how this confusion might lead to violence, right? If you're confused, if you can't really find out how to read people, then you might become aggressive and even turn into violence. And so we're actually putting quite much focus on that in this book. So we're hoping this might, the goal is to have this book in teachers' education in Norway. But I suppose the reason why it's really not focused might partly be because LLH has up till now at least mostly focused on gay and lesbian rights. They haven't really focused on trans. I think they're trying more now. It's even the name of the organization has changed. Yeah,
I will meet with Tarjan Stein on Thursday. Yeah. He's working on these issues at the LH.
Yeah.
So I will learn more. But I also understand from other interviewees that there has been a big divide.
And
in fact, there was even a political split, Kjell Erik was telling me.
Yeah.
In which the transsexual leader rejected to be part of this reform.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's also because the transsexual leader, she insists very much that this has nothing to do with sexuality, it only has to do with gender identity. Right. So she doesn't want to have anything to do with the gay community. So I think it's probably because they haven't had such a strong organization and being such an important lobbyist. But I think also the concept of sexuality, the way it's taught in school and the way it's presented in the Norwegian public, I'd say it's simple in the way that you're either heterosexual or you're homosexual. bisexuality doesn't exist, right? And then it's, if you're homosexual, it's okay if you're not performing your, if you're not performing weird gender, right? You should sort of, you should look normal. You should look like a normal man or a normal woman. The only sort of problem is that you're sexually attracted to your own sex, but you should look normal, right? So it's all really sort of clean and simple, and it's, and that way it's sort of handleable. It's that way it sort of can be taken into school, right?
Yes.
And so I'm thinking like transsexual. Then it, as soon as you're sort of trying to deal with trans questions, then it'll sort of open up a much wider or more complex picture of gender and sexuality and how it's all performed and interlinked in different ways. I think to really do this homo tolerance thing, they're probably the best way of getting that true is to make it all clear cut and easy and you know, nice and clean, because and also, I mean, the whole base for this tolerance is that it's that's the way you're born, right? It's nothing you're allowed to want to try out or want to sort of live because that's because for the political reasons or whatever. I mean, it's then it's not tolerable anymore.
This is leading me to ask you about queer studies and the conversation with queer studies. Because from other interviews I have gathered that there has been a bit of a political point of contention and in regards to the queer identity, as it might not seem strategic or to political advancement within legislation and so on. And then other people have mentioned porosities or even a kind of disregard for queer studies. Is there, because I know that you have been closely working along these lines, is there a conversation at the level of a curriculum building with that knowledge? Or how do you see that?
Well, I think well, it's slightly hard to interpret, because at the time the current curriculum have this expression saying teaching should deal with a variety in sexual orientations. That's sort of the and this is new from the current, like the previous one was only saying like homosexuality and heterosexuality. That was sort of, that's the way it was presented in when sexuality was mentioned, it was heterosexuality and homosexuality. But in 2006 they changed in social science and biology, they changed into a variety of sexual orientations should be sort of included in the teaching. And that expression sort of indicates a wider perspective, right?
Yeah.
But then in religion, they have kept the old. And so religion is saying ethical questions should be discussed in relation to you blah, 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 heterosexuality and homosexuality. So they have not incorporated this new variety of sexual orientation. So I'm not really sure, because it's the LLH has up till now been quite hostile to the queer perspective. It's not as simple anymore, and LLH is changing, and also it's LLH is not like talking with a homogene voice. They're like sort of a complex organization, but I'm not really sure where this variety thing comes from, because the LLH rhetoric has not included that before very recently.
But critics, not the mainstream, but the opposition has been having this debate, so perhaps it's...
Yeah, but I don't think they've had any influence on the on the curriculum because they haven't been invited to the it's usually the formal organizations being invited, right? And that's LLH representing the gay community in Norway, so to speak. So I'm a bit and also I think the textbooks, they don't really know how to deal with this either. Because in the textbooks is usually written from the traditional perspectives on either heterosexual or homosexual, and that's the way you are throughout your life, right? So this variety and sort of complexity isn't really taken into account in textbooks either. So it seems like no one really knows what this is supposed to mean and how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been helping the education, not the department, but the directorate, is that a word, in education. So that's sort of the office doing what the Department of Education tell them to do.
Mm-hmm.
they've just made a new. It's supposed to be a resource for teaching on sexuality for teachers. So that's it's a way of sort of trying to implementing the curriculum by being more specific. This is how you can do it, and you know, this is ideas to how to handle it and stuff. And I've been helping them to put this resource material together, and then we've tried to illustrate what it might mean to do this variation thing in teaching. But I think the binary concept of sexuality is so strongly embedded, or it's mm-hmm. so strong in Norway. So I don't know where the teachers should they really find inspiration to do it differently when that's the way. And I mean that's still there also the rhetoric from LLH usually to sort of say we need rights and we need money to do research on the life situation of gays in Norway. So it's still really right. Much divided.
You've mentioned a couple of times that maybe we could go in this last section more in depth with the issue of religion and ethics in relationship to this, to education or even beyond. If you could mention more in depth the way that homosexuality is treated along the lines of religion in Norway.
Mm-hmm. How could I? we do have an anti-discriminating law in Norway that says that you should not be discriminated when you apply for a job according to your sexual orientation. But the Church of Norway and all other religious communities are excepted from that law, so they are allowed to discriminate. So that's sort of the legal situation. So it's sort of accepted that the Church of Norway and religious communities in Norway are sort of against homosexuals.
And
so they're allowed to.
The justification is what? Because
It would be then biblical or other normative. Scripture interpretations and stuff, but we do have something called like the church group for gays and lesbians in Norway. They've been around for at least 20 years, probably more. And today, I think about half of the bishops in Norwegian Church, the Church of Norway, like the state church. accept gay and lesbian ministers. I mean, it's the bishops that do their ordination. So if you can't find a bishop who are willing to ordain you, then you can't become a minister. So that was really difficult up till quite recently, because no bishops would be willing to ordain an open gay or lesbian. So if you were actually living with a same-sex partner, you couldn't tell if you were to be ordained as a minister, mm-hmm. because then they wouldn't ordain you. So then we had the first female bishop. We got the first female bishop in 1995, and she was quite shortly after she started sort of opening up for ordaining openly gay and lesbian ministers. But that was really controversial, really, really, really controversial. And for a while she didn't want, even if she personally wanted to do it, she didn't do it. And she had big conflicts with her own lesbian friends then that wanted her to ordain them. So that was really a big conflict. But today I think it's about half of the bishops that. So it's 11 bishops, and I think five of them today are willing to do that. That sort of illustrates how the complexity and the interpretations, and how you can interpret these few biblical sayings on same-sex practice can be interpreted in several ways. And I mean, if you go to the States, you'll find the same complexity also within Muslim communities. You'll find also gay Muslim communities, and you'll find openly gay imams presenting different interpretations of Islamic traditions on homosexuality. But we haven't got that sort of progressive or right, left-winged or liberal version of Islam in Norway yet. It's mm-hmm. it's probably coming, but the sort of the official representatives of Islamic communities in Norway, they are still, I think, fairly conservative. Same goes for the Jewish community. Like, we have a really orthodox conservative Jewish community in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you'll find the same diversity that you will find within the Lutheran Norwegian, the Church of Norway. In other parts of the world, you'll find the same diversity within Muslim communities and Jewish communities, but we haven't got that diversity represented in Norway, which I think tend to then present both Jews. But I mean, Jews, nobody really bother about the Jews at the moment. It's the Muslims, they're sort of the representatives of the other and the problem and, you know, all the difficult stuff at the moment. And so in Norway at the moment, Muslims are sort of being equivalent with anti gay rights and stuff, homo negativism and homophobia and stuff. So that's but I mean, the tricky thing is that, I mean, for some reason it's the Islamic Muslim community seems to be more affected by the, it's worse when they're negative than if the Christians are, in a way. So the Christians being negative or hostile or hateful, they're not being attacked and criticized as much, I think. Somehow they're, well, they still are, but I think Muslims are being more attacked, because it's just, that's just adding on to their all the bad stuff that sort of are being said about.
It's associated with them.
So, but we've had a handful of Muslim, gay Muslim men sort of coming out in the public over the last few years. And it's LLH has their own, as you might probably know, they have their own group called Queer World. So that's like the international group within LLH. They're quite active, and they've also had quite much governmental support lately. So, I mean, that can be seen as a part of the... I have a colleague, he has written about this, how this can be seen as sort of the part of the government's politics on religion. They're accepting that religious communities are allowed to discriminate on one hand side, but at the same time they're generously supporting this Queer World group. So we've had like two different gay imams coming to Norway for the last year and a half, I think, mm-hmm. visiting, like being, having lots of public attention, doing seminars and stuff. And that's all paid by the government, but it's all arranged by the Queer World group, but it's all paid by the government. So the government is sort of pumping money into the opposing voices among Muslims, if you see what I mean. They're mm-hmm, they're mm-hmm. generously supporting them to help them raise their voice and you know. Bring other interpretations into the picture in Norwegian public, since we haven't got any really representatives of this more progressive liberal Islamic theology within Norway. So then they're being shipped from the States and given a sort of a chance to present other perspectives. So that's quite interesting how this Queer World group in LLH has gotten quite much governmental support over the last few years.